Your name?
My name is Steve Jacobs. I'm one of the musicians at the SOA Watch Music Collective.
And what brings you to SOA Watch?
Well, I've been coming down here since 1996 to protest the fact that the U.S. government is providing weapons and training to Latin American soldiers that have killed members of my Catholic faith. And so I've been coming down here since 1996 to assist with that.
The other night I got a chance to hear you play The Ballad of Roy Bourgeois. Pretty amazing song. If you're willing, maybe you can play it.
Sure, I'd be glad to. Come all you friends of justice, and a story I will tell about a priest named Roy Bourgeois. Fort Benning knows him well. While serving in the Navy in far off Vietnam, he saw firsthand the works of war, the bullet and the bomb. Amidst the death and suffering, Roy learned another way. From a Catholic missionary, and the Spirit seemed to say, my ways are not the ways of men, and if you follow me, then you will have a cross to bear, and not an M16. And so with inspiration, Roy did receive a call. He joined the missionaries that were called the Marinals. Now tell me who is braver when sent off to foreign lands. Person with a weapon or open heart and hand. Now when you live among the poor, you begin to question why the rich receive the lion's share and the poor left to die. And what good does the U.S. hope to gain by giving guns? Soldiers trained at the SOA who are killing priests and nuns. While working in Bolivia, Roy dared to take a side. Arrested, beaten, tortured, he was threatened with his life. Expelled out of that country, then went to Salvador, where death squads killed with impunity and made war upon the poor. You've heard about the massacres, you've heard about the pain, the slaughter of the Jesuits, of El Mazote slain, of Mara Clark and Edith Ford, to only name a few. When he heard Romero's voice, Roy knew what he must do. He found out that their killers were all trained at SOA and armed by the U.S. Army at Fort Benning, USA. One night outside their barracks with two friends, he climbed a tree, and they blasted out Romero's words to the soldiers at their feet. Well, the three were all arrested and all sent off to jail. But they would not be silent, and their stories they would tell. Roy traveled across this country to speak to old and young. Take the U.S. government to task for what they'd done. So folks begin to gather outside Fort Benning's gate, At first only a handful, but their numbers soon were great. We number 20,000 now from every town and state. To tell the U.S. government that justice cannot wait. Politicians speak of justice and of democracy while they are funding terrorists in wars across the sea. Economic domination surely is their final goal. While giant corporations buy politicians' souls. There are many kinds of oppression and inequality in our work, in schools, in churches, in society. But oppression needs complicity of silence to go on. Roy learned that solidarity with others makes you strong. So how then could he turn his back when invited to attend a woman's ordination? Can this only be for men? The church said, Roy, you must renounce this kind of equality, or you will have suspended your priestly faculties. But Roy would not be silenced by the Roman hierarchy. Said God can inspire women as God has inspired me. To say God cannot do this is to dare to limit God. So I will stand with women priests, with them I cast my lot. Now some will follow blindly, and some of us will not. And some will search for answers and examine what we've got. But if you want examples of good Christianity, then Roy Bourgeois was a hero for his humanity.
Steve Jacobs, why'd you write the song?
Well, we've been coming down here and writing songs about the School of the Americas, and we sort of created our own culture of activism down there, a culture that speaks a language that names the atrocities that have been committed in our name, in the name of democracy, in the name of protecting the United States' economic interest. And so I think it's important to have songs that explain why we're coming down here and why people are opposed to our tax money being spent to fund terrorism and killings and assassinations and torture in other countries.
Who is Roy Bourgeois? And I thought it was interesting. You have some similarities. Not only have you both worked very hard on this closing the School of the Americas, you're also both had experiences in the wars yourself in Vietnam.
Well, Roy Bourgeois was a Cajun, from a Cajun family in Louisiana, joined the military, was in Vietnam, started volunteering at an orphanage out there. And there was a Catholic missionary out there, and he thought, well, you know, this is kind of different than what I'm doing. I'm out here with a gun and participating in the war, and this guy is really brave. He's out here taking care of war orphans, and so Roy was pretty much inspired by that, and then he decided to leave the Navy and become a Maryknoll missionary. And so he went through all of the training that the Maryknoll provides, and they sent him down to Bolivia. And he was helping to organize campesinos, very, very poor people, and living among them. They were organizing meetings to form cooperatives so that they could sell their produce collectively. And my understanding is that the people who already controlled the markets down there felt that this was a threat, and they didn't want Roy down there organizing people and making them feel empowered, and so they started spying on them, and they arrested Roy and picked him up and took him in a car to a police station. One of the other Maryknoll priests happened to be in that part of town and saw the police hustle Roy Bourgeois out of the car and into the police station, and he went in there a little bit afterwards and said, "I'm here to see Father Roy Bourgeois," and the police said, "We don't have a Roy Bourgeois. We don't know what you're talking about." And the priest said, "Yes, you do. I saw you bring him in here. And I've already contacted my superiors in North America. We know that you have him. And I've already contacted, U.S. government officials." I don't know if the priest had actually did that, but he was telling them that he did. And he said, "If you do anything to harm him, you know, you're going to be in trouble." I found out later from Roy, I knew Roy for about 10 years before I knew this story. I had met this Maryknoll priest. This was Father Jack. I can't remember Jack's last name. American-Irish priest was the one who saw Roy being taken into the police station. He said, after several hours, they released Roy to me, and they said, "You better get him out of here, or we'll kill him, or he won't live long." And Roy did not want to go. I didn't find this out until about 10 years later, because Roy never really talks about this, but when he was taken into the police station, he was beaten up and interrogated and stripped down, and they bound his arms above up in the air, and they sliced his back open with razor blades. So he was also a torture victim. And after he was released, Father Jack was trying to encourage him to leave the country, telling him his life was in danger. And Roy wasn't really wanting to leave, but finally agreed to, and then went to El Salvador, where he had some other friends from Maryknoll. And this was around, I think, 79, 80, when the Salvadoran War death squads were pretty much in control and committing a lot of atrocities and human rights violations. They assassinated Oscar Romero, the Archbishop of San Salvador. They killed four American church women in 1980. And then in 1989, they killed six Jesuit priests. And Roy knew some of the church women, and he came up to the United States in the 1980s and got permission from Maryknoll to organize some sort of political activity in order to educate people in the United States about what U.S. foreign policy was doing and how it was affecting Catholic clergy and the Catholic people down there in Latin America. And I met him sometime in the mid-80s. We were at a demonstration at Offutt Air Force Base, and that's the Strategic Air Command, where they control all the nuclear weapons. And he joined us in a civil disobedience action. I knew that he was an ex-missionary, but this was several years before he started this School of the Americas Watch. But he was traveling around the country trying to figure out what he could do to educate people. And he started going to a lot of Catholic worker events where people were actively doing civil disobedience, protesting at military bases. And so he decided to start an event down here at Fort Benning. 1989, the six Jesuits were murdered, and so he decided to come down to Fort Benning, and he got a little apartment down here right outside the South Gate, and started organizing demonstrations every year on the anniversary of the six Jesuits being slaughtered. This was in November of 1989 that happened. That's why our School of America's events happen every November. So in 1990, he had a demonstration out there, and several people crossed onto the base and were arrested. And so every year, more and more people came. At first, just a handful of people. Roy had met some Veterans for Peace. They started coming down. He had gone around and talked to a lot of women religious congregations within the Catholic Church, a lot of Dominican sisters, and various groups of nuns. So I heard about it in 1996, and I came down here to see what was happening a couple of months before the November action, and Roy was in prison then for doing a civil disobedience on the base, and there was a Methodist minister, Carol Richardson, who was coordinating everything out of Roy's apartment down here by the South Gate. And so that was the first year that I attended, and 600 people were, or 600 people attended. 60 people went across the line, and that was the first time I went across the line. Some of us drove onto the base, and we took a lot of crosses with the names of SOA victims, and we went to the barracks where the students, the military students from Latin America, live while they're going to classes, and we set up an impromptu cemetery right in the courtyard between the two barracks buildings, and we put about 25 crosses on the lawn, and then talked to some of the soldiers and handed out rosaries to them and told them this was the anniversary of the murder of the 6 Jesuit priests, and we asked them not to ever take any orders to kill civilians, and of course we were arrested within about 30-40 minutes and taken to the stockade there at the base. 60 of us arrested there in 1996, and every year after that the numbers just got larger and larger and larger, and this movement has really grown because it was so well organized, and because Father Roy Bourgeois took the time to travel all around the country and speak to college students and the progressive activists within parishes all around the country. And it's a testament to his organizing skill that he was able to get enough people to build this organization the way he has.
Like Father Roy Bourgeois, Steve Jacobs, you were an experience in Vietnam, and what you were a conscientious objector.
Actually, I was never in Vietnam. I was in the military serving in hospitals during the last 2 years that the war was going on. So I was taking care of combat vets after they were wounded and sent back. I worked in a hospital in Charleston, South Carolina. I worked on a ward for amputees, helping people learn how to take care of their wounds and their stumps after their arms or legs got blown off. And then I worked on the psychiatric ward, but I never did go in country. But I was in during the last 2 years of the war. So those things affected me. I realized that war is not a glamorous adventure, which is what I thought when I first joined. I thought I was going to have a grand adventure with historical overtones. But you know, while I was in the Navy, Richard Nixon, who was my commander in chief, resigned. He was impeached, and part of the articles of impeachment were that he was carrying on illegal bombing of Cambodia. And when the president resigned, I thought, geez, my leader is a criminal. I better start paying attention to the political actions, or otherwise I can be a pawn of these war criminals. And so I started paying attention, and then I read the Pentagon Papers, the secret history of the war that Daniel Ellsberg had released, and then I became morally opposed to the war and eventually got out as a conscientious objector. I got out a year and a half early out of my 4-year enlistment because they didn't want conscientiously objecting people in the military at that time, because the war had just ended when I decided to be a CEO.
You had a last verse to your song. You took a second when you played it Friday night, because you say nothing about Roy Bourgeois' life is humorous. But this verse is very both serious and quite humorous, this last verse.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of humorous things about Roy Bourgeois, but, you know, I didn't really know how to attach this last verse, because it is kind of silly. I heard this woman talk to members of the diocese in Jefferson City, which our bishop sent in during the mid 1980s sent some people around to the various Catholic churches to ask people how they felt about various issues like abortion and birth control and women's ordination and things like that. And so I attended one of these sessions. And when they asked the question, well, what do y'all think about women's ordination? You know, the Pope says that only men can be priests because all of the apostles were men. And there was a woman there, I don't even remember her name, but she said, you know, when I hear the male clergy talk about how only men can be priests, it makes me think that they think it's more important to pee like Jesus than it is to be like Jesus. And I thought, man, that's a great line. That really sort of sums things up in a very pithy, terse way. It's funny, but it's true. And, you know, when I was writing this song, I thought, well, this would be a great line for a song, but I don't know, Roy, you know, the first part of that song is pretty serious, and it's dramatic. And to have it all end as a joke, a punchline of the joke, I don't know if it takes away from Roy's story or if it adds to it. I like to think it adds to it, because he's a human being and he's really a lot of fun. So I guess I could play the last four lines of it. If we question church authority, then maybe we will see if men can be like Jesus when he said, be just like me. This is most important, it's the way we all could be. It's all about your actions, but it's not the way you pee. That always gets a big laugh from all the nuns in the audience whenever I play that song. So Roy's been persecuted by the church for coming out publicly against women's ordination and
coming out publicly
yeah. to promote women's ordination. And several weeks ago, he was walking through Vatican Square with a big banner calling for women's ordination. He was detained by the Vatican guards for about 3 hours. They didn't arrest him, but they took him in and expelled him out of the Vatican State. You know, he's being the Vatican officials have ordered Marinol to excommunicate him, and it's caused great dissension within the Marinol community. A lot of the Marinol missionaries are very, very progressive, very astute politically, and they understand that Roy Bourgeois is probably the most famous Marinol priest that's ever been, and he's had their back up here in the United States while they've been working overseas. And so a lot of his co-workers within Marinol, the nuns and the priests and the lay missionaries from Marinol, are just really appalled that the Vatican is trying to excommunicate him. I don't know if it's official. I think it may have already be official that he's excommunicated. So he's not, whenever he goes to speak at Catholic campuses anymore, he's not able to do that because the Vatican is trying to silence him. And, you know, if he had lived in the 1600s during the time of Galileo, he would have been probably burnt at the stake as a heretic for saying the things that he's saying now about women's ordination. So it's an amazing story. It's an amazing story. He's very consistent in his conscience, and you know, those of us who pay attention to those things love him for that, and hold him up.
Steve Jacobs, thanks for your time. Any final thoughts you care to share as the procession, the funeral procession, is taking place here at Fort Benning to commemorate the slaying of the six Jesuits in 1989?
Well, it seems as if, you know, we have more and more trouble every year. There's always new Congress people that aren't educated about U.S. Military policy and how the military is implicated in providing the training and the means and the weapons for torture and state-sponsored oppression of civilians to continue in places like Latin America and all around the world. So we have to keep educating our legislators, and we have to keep the pressure on. So that's why we keep coming back down here year after year until the school is closed.
Thanks so much. I guess if you're done, thank you. If not, if you have one more song you want to share, feel free.
Well, I could do the very first SOA song. I think this was the very first. In 1996, I came down here, and I was the music collective.
Now it's a whole array.
Yeah, it's really grown, and we have a lot of great musicians who come down here. And you know, I was just an itinerant. I'm not a professional folk singer. I was living in a Catholic worker community. Still am, but I think this is the oldest School of the Americas song. I never heard any others until I wrote this one, and I started performing it down here. And it's called New Columbus Stockade Blues. It's taken from a song that was very, very popular in the 1920s. And they used to play it on the radio. And the guy who wrote the Columbus Stockade Blues lived down here in Columbus, Georgia. And so I stole the melody from it and just rearranged the words. Way down in Columbus, Georgia, my friends and I all gathered at the gate. Way down at Fort Benning Stockade, we filled it up to close the SOA. So go and arrest us if you wish to, but you should let your conscience be your guide. That's why we say, close the SOA. For the truth cannot be silenced if you try. We found a manual at the School of Assassins with the kind of things taught at the SOA. Executions, torture, threats and kidnapping. They don't want that book to see the light of day. So go and arrest us if you wish to, but you should let your conscience be your guide. That's why we say, close the SOA. For the truth cannot be silenced if you try. Well, the army says, now don't cross over, or you will be arrested by MPs. But we crossed that line so we could bring attention to the fact that justice knows no boundaries. So go and arrest us if you wish to, but you should let your conscience be your guide. For there to be any kind of justice, then Uncle Sam must join the other side. Now Uncle Sam has got a problem with drugs brought to the good old USA by Mexican generals and Manuel Noriega. They all graduated from the SOA. So go and arrest us if you wish to, but that ain't gonna make us change our mind. For there to be any kind of justice, then Uncle Sam must join the other side. Last night, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed that we had closed the SOA, and all the death and intimidation was no longer being paid for in my name. So go and arrest us if you wish to, but you should let your conscience be your guide. That's why we say, close the SOA, for the truth cannot be silenced if you try. Well, the army says, we'll give them guns and democracy, and we'll teach them to be nice and to be kind. But if a few bad apples kill some innocent people, well, at least the guns we gave are working fine. So go and arrest us if you wish to, but you should let your conscience be your guide. That's why we say, close the SOA, for the truth cannot be silenced if you try. For the truth cannot be silenced if you try.
Thanks, Steve Jacobs. I already asked you for your final thoughts, if you have any final thoughts.
No, I'm good. I think that'll do it, Pete.
Thanks so much.
You bet.